Good morning. This is Chair Rena Moran. Pursuant to House Rules 10.01, I call this remote interim meeting of the House Ways and Means Committee to order. Ms. Sparkman, will you please take the roll for attendance?
Chair Moran?
Present.
Moran, present. Vice Chair Olson?
Present.
Olson, present. Representative Garofalo? Representative Garofalo? Representative Albright?
Present.
Albright, present. Representative Becker Finn?
Present.
Becker Finn, present. Representative Bernardi?
Present.
Bernardi, present. Representative Eklund?
Present.
Eklund, present. Representative Hansen?
Present.
Hansen, present. Representative Hassan? Representative Hassan? Representative Hertas?
Hertas, present.
Hertas, present. Representative Hornstein?
Present.
Hornstein, present. Representative Johnson?
Johnson, present.
Johnson, present. Representative Kreisha? Representative Kreisha? Representative Liebling?
Present.
Kreisha, present.
Kreisha, present. Representative Lilly? Representative Lilly? Representative Mariani? Representative Mariani? Representative Marquardt, excused. Representative Miller? Representative Miller? Representative Nash?
Nash, present.
Nash, present. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, present.
Nelson, present. Representative Noor?
Noor, present.
Noor, present. Representative O'Neill? Representative O'Neill? Representative Pulowski?
Pulowski, present.
Pulowski, present. Representative Petersburg? Representative Petersburg? Representative Pinto?
Pinto, present.
Pinto, present. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, present.
Schumacher, present. Representative Schultz?
Schultz, present.
Schultz, present. Representative Scott?
Here.
Scott, present. Representative Sundin, excused. Representative Garofalo? Representative Hassan? Representative Lilly? Representative Mariani? Representative O'Neill? Representative Petersburg? That concludes the roll and a quorum is present.
Great, so a quorum is present. So here we are on December the 16th. I must say though, it is really good to see everyone back. It's good to see your faces. I hope that everyone has taken some time off to just be still, get some rest, be with family, and just in, you know, any way possible during a pandemic. Because we're still there, that you have spent some time to do some reflection as we head into 2022. But I must say, it is really good to see everyone here today. Well, members, we will not be taking any official actions today. The reason we are meeting is to review the November forecast that was recently released by Minnesota Management and Budget. As you all know by now, the state is currently projected to incur a historic surplus as we enter the next legislative session. So we're going to learn some more about how MMB calculated the projected $7.7 billion surplus for the current biennium and what the underlying economic trends are that have influenced this estimate. As a reminder, this forecast is not binding for the purposes of creating our budget targets next session. We will have to wait for the upcoming February forecast to receive those final numbers. And as we've learned over the last 2 years, a lot can change in a few months when it comes to predicting our financial future during a pandemic. I believe we will hear about some of those risk factors today as well. We will start with the full presentation from MMB, and then we will use the rest of our time today for questions. And I'm sure we have plenty of questions. With that, I would like to invite Commissioner Showalters to begin his remark. And after that, we will have Dr. Laura, I don't want to mess your name up, Dr. Laura Colombo-Candis, somewhere around there, Colombo-Candis. She will pronounce her name for you. And also following that will be Bryant Dow. With that, Commissioner, please begin your presentation.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Members, I appreciate the chance to meet with you today. My name is Jim Showalter, Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget. We have just released the forecast and just appreciate the chance to go in longer form, talking through the issues that are in it and address your questions. As the chair mentioned, I am joined today by Dr. Laura Colombo-Candis. And the way I think about it, and Laura coached me some years ago, was think about Colombo and just add in Candis, and you're getting in the right ballpark. She'll coach us as well as Bryant Dow, who's the Director of Budget Operations. Anna Mingi, our State Budget Director, had another commitment and can't join us. So Brian will be covering the spending portion of the forecast. So the forecast does include up-to-date information on the state's budget, as well as new U.S. economic data from our consultants, IHS Market. The national data and trends from IHS inform our forecast of Minnesota's economy and revenues. Dr. Colombo-Candis will explain those economic assumptions and the impact on tax revenue much more in this presentation. I just want to point out that, you know, for this committee in particular, you'll remember that there were leftover federal funds at the end of session from the ARP. About $1.15 billion of federal money are not in this forecast. They're not part of the numbers that you're seeing here. What we're really focusing here is on the state's own revenues and general fund balance. So that is what we're going to be doing. As always, the long form information is really just a hidden wealth of information. 100 pages of detailed descriptions, tables, that get you really to understanding all the effort that goes into this projection. That's available on MMB's website at mn.gov/MMB. With that, we'll start the presentation. Today's forecast resets the state's budget. On the slide, you'll see the key points and key themes that hopefully you'll walk away understanding from the November forecast. We are anticipating a surplus of $7.7 billion by the end of the biennium. And that good news continues throughout the planning horizon. We closed out the previous fiscal year that ended on June 30th, as you all know, with really incredibly strong tax collections based on growth in incomes, based on growth in consumer spending and corporate profits. This pushed more than $3 billion of enhanced revenues from last year into this biennium and formed really the core of this projected surplus. With all of our economic activity well above expectations, it follows that even modest changes in economic outlook result in substantially more revenues than previously expected. That additional revenue gets us to our anticipated numbers for 22 and 23. As always, this forecast is based on current law. And so while we're looking at changes in economic activity that lead to changes in revenue, we're looking at the changes in a few factors that change the spending, anticipated spending. There are also current law triggers in statute. One of these replenishes the state's rainy day fund. And with this forecast, the budget reserve is again full at $2.656 billion. Chair, you're absolutely right. Forecasting is always tricky. I don't think any of us really ever know the future. But when things are going fairly steady and the economy is in sort of a steady level, our forecasts track and I think perform exceedingly well. The last couple of years, we've been buffeted by surprises. And so, you know, the projections are always the riskiest, particularly the longer you go out. But at this point, we do see improvement going into the future. So bottom line here is $7.7 billion. It's out of the ordinary, even in these extraordinary times. The state's fiscal position is very strong. And, you know, it gives us an opportunity to sustain and continue the actions that we've been taking on to respond to emerging needs. The next slide gives you sort of a graphical view of what's in this forecast. Essentially, you could go back to the end of session and after all the bills were enacted into law, you'd look at the fiscal numbers that we had. We left about $127 million unallocated at that time. But even as you were, if you could go back in your time machine and look at that, you would also then be able to look at the June 12th revenue numbers, even the May 10th numbers, certainly the July 10th numbers. And you would see in each of those reports that we were getting substantially more collections than previously anticipated. You know, 10 to 11% more above previous estimates. So what the forecast today really incorporates is what has happened already, and it projects that future into the future. So you've got the what's happened already, that green bar. What we're looking into the future is the blue part. We anticipate that with those strong revenues continue, with modifications that Dr. Kalambakidis will talk about, along combined with some small reductions in spending, and that adds to the bottom line for the current biennium. The total of that green bar and the blue bar is in fact greater than $7.7 billion. And that's why I mentioned the additional piece of the forecast, which is the triggers, where by law, where we subtract off current law allocations for the budget reserve, for the stadium reserve, for a transfer to the 21st Century Minerals Fund, and the repaying of the June accelerated sales tax, getting us to that $7.7 billion figure. The next slide just shows you the same picture in numbers. And so you can see the beginning balance of this year, the improvement of $3.1 billion is that combination of higher revenues and less spending from the current biennium, getting you to that $3.1 billion. Obviously, that's just a huge, comfort as you're looking at a big change in this forecast, but knowing that a substantial part of it's already in the bank. I talked about the revenues. You see here that we're anticipating about $56 billion for the biennium, about $5.1 billion more than we were anticipating after the laws of the last session. And as always, we'll go through the changes in spending. This time, there isn't a big net change in spending. You'll see here that there's differences in HHS that pretty much counterbalance each other, along with some decreases in K-12 spending and some, I think, excellent work of state agencies, including MMB, where we were able to refinance and make sure that we were getting the most federal participation for the state's pandemic work. As mentioned on the last slide, the rainy day fund is fully replenished. You get down to the stadium reserve, and then you get down to the budgetary balance. I just wanted a quick note on that budget reserve piece. Now, the triggers that we use to replenish the budget reserve are uniquely Minnesotan, and you know they've just served us so well. You know, just a few years ago, back in 2010, we had nothing in the budget reserve. And literally a year ago, most of us were concerned, just before the last November forecast, most of us were concerned that the budget reserve was going to not get us through the biennium. So that kind of having money on the side gives us time to assess where we're at, avoid making drastic cuts that change people's lives or increase revenues that change people's lives. And it gives us that time to gather, plan and gather information. And so It's been just a mechanism that's worked really well for us, and just to thank the committee for continuing to sort of take that long view of state fiscal management. With that, Madam Chair, if it's okay, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Kalambakidis to talk about those continued improvements in the U.S. and Minnesota economy.
Yes, Dr. Kalambakidis, please.
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for inviting us here today. For the record, I'm Laura Kalambakidis, Minnesota State Economist. I'm going to start with the U.S. economic outlook and how it changed since February. And then I'll move to Minnesota's economy, talk a bit about the labor market here in Minnesota, and then I'm going to turn to details of our new revenue forecast. And so to be clear, the outlook from our consulting firm IHS that informed our November forecast is their November outlook. They have since released another monthly outlook. They release one every month. And so I'll also share some of the differences that we can note regarding their December forecast. So in the first chart, I'm showing dollar values or levels of real GDP. So it's not growth rates, it's the dollar values of real GDP. And we're showing the history and we're showing IHS's November forecast for 21 through 25. So if you look towards the left of the chart, you can see in the history, the decline in GDP that occurred during the recession of 08-09 and the 10 years of steady economic growth or expansion that followed. And then you can see the abrupt two-quarter contraction that was triggered by the COVID-19 pandemic in the spring of 2020. So you can, these are quarterly data. So you can see the two negatives, the two data points in 2020 that go down are the first and second quarter of 2020. And that second quarter contraction was the largest quarterly contraction on record. So it was a really very dramatic economic event. But then you can also see the sharp bounce back in the second half of 2020. And that third quarter bounce back was the largest quarterly growth that we've seen. So we had that abrupt second quarter bounce back, and then steady growth is now expected to follow. So that unexpectedly strong economic growth in the second half of 2020 and throughout 2021 has driven tax revenue gains at the federal level. So this has happened at the federal level, that tax revenues are higher than much higher than expected, and in many states, including, as you heard from the commissioner, here in Minnesota. As the U.S. economy continues to recover from the 2020 recession, personal income, home values, financial asset values, corporate profits, they've all risen. The U.S. unemployment rate fell in October to a seasonally adjusted 4.6%. In one more month of data, we now know that it's fallen to 4.2% in November. That was the lowest since March of 20. And total employment is at about 97% of what it was before the pandemic. IHS, our macroeconomic consulting firm, expects employment to recover to its full pre-pandemic level next year. Some important economic variables have exhibited stronger growth than expected so far this year. The current IHS forecasts for employment and for real or inflation-adjusted consumer spending are higher than in their February outlook. In addition, forecasts for nominal consumer spending, wage and salary income, corporate profits, these are all variables that include the effect of inflation, and they also more directly influence tax revenues. These values are all higher than in February. IHS is in November was forecasting U.S. real GDP to increase by a robust 5.5% in 21 this year and decelerate to 4.3% next year. Growth next year is expected to be supported by a declining rate of COVID infections, easing of supply chain blockages, and a gradual increase in labor force participation. And then real GDP growth is expected to average about 2.7% annually from 23 through 25. Now, that was in their November outlook. They have small changes in real GDP growth expected in their December outlook. In their December outlook, they raised the forecast for this year's GDP growth from 5.5% to 5.7%. And they've kept next year the same at 4.3. And then they have slightly lower growth in the out years, so 23 to 25, just by a tenth of a percentage point. So the big picture story about their December outlook versus their November outlook is that they've pushed some growth and some inflation into more current recent years, so into the near term, and then taken some out of the later years. The U.S. outlook, of course, as you heard from the commissioner, remains uncertain and depends on the path of the pandemic. And it depends on the responses of households, businesses, and governments to that changing public health landscape. In this forecast, or in their November forecast, IHS assumes that the rate of COVID-19 infections continues to recede. The statement they made in their November outlook about COVID-19 was that they now expect U.S. society to move toward managing the risks of coexisting with the virus for an extended period. The November IHS forecast reflects the impact of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. They have not yet included into the forecast the Build Back Better reconciliation bill, because the size of it, what exactly its scope is going to be, what the timing of it, all those things are too uncertain to have included in the November forecast, and they haven't put it into their December forecast either. So I'll now walk through a few examples of changes to U.S. variables that impact Minnesota's tax revenue forecast. So I'm going to be talking about U.S. variables here, but they're U.S. variables that influence our Minnesota economic model, which in turn influences our tax revenue forecast. So this chart shows levels, again, dollar values of U.S. spending on durable goods. This is nominal spending on durable goods, so it includes the amount of stuff that people are buying, and it includes the prices of those goods. And these are durable goods other than autos and medical devices. So these are things like furniture and appliances and electronics and athletic equipment. And most of these things are taxable under Minnesota's sales tax. The solid line shows IHS's November outlook, and the dashed line shows what they expected in February. Now, you know that during the pandemic, consumers switched their spending away from face-to-face services, personal services, recreation, travel, toward goods. And that shift caused goods spending to substantially exceed its pre-pandemic peak, and it remains at elevated levels. Spending on durable goods is expected to grow 23% this year, more than double the rate forecast in February. So for the next chart illustrates the change in the inflation forecast. So during most of the whole time that I've been state economist, inflation has been subdued. And so while it's been an important part of the conversation about the budget, it hasn't been the most important thing in the economic outlook. But following all those years of low inflation, price levels have become more salient in this forecast. In this chart, the height of the bars shows annual growth in the consumer price index. So this is different from the quarterly growth changes that you read about in the paper. So those are typically the headline CPI changes are four quarters apart, and these are annual growth rates. The blue bars show the history and IHS's November outlook, and the gray bars show their February forecast. IHS raised their forecast of CPI inflation for this year to 4.5% from 2.1% in the February outlook, so that's a big change. For 22, IHS now expects 3.3% inflation compared to 2.1% in February, and that was as of their November outlook. And the forecast changes for this year and next year are the result of two main developments during this year. First, energy prices, including oil prices, have been substantially higher than expected in February. And these prices are expected to remain elevated in the near term. And second, that high demand for durable goods I mentioned, along with issues related to the global supply chain, have caused a surge in durable goods prices. As of IHS's December outlook, they now are expecting a slightly higher inflation this year at 4.6%. They've raised the inflation expectation next year to 3.7%, and then 23 to 2.3%, and then it goes down to 2.1% after that. So again, the main story is that they're pushing some of that inflation into the near term and lowering it later on. IHS does still expect the gradual resolution of supply chain issues and a gradually rising U.S. labor force participation rate to slow inflation. They forecast CPI inflation to settle near 2% annually at the end of next year and then remain in the 2% thereafter. In their November outlook, so related to the inflation forecast, in the November outlook, IHS expected the Federal Reserve to begin taking action to raise the federal funds interest rate in March of 23. In their December outlook, they've accelerated that and they've moved this assumption to September of next year. So that's a change, both the change in inflation and the change in relatedly, the change in timing of Fed action are the result of higher inflation, actual inflation values toward the end of 2021. The next chart illustrates an important variable for Minnesota's income tax forecast. So this is total wage and salary income for the United States. And this is information that we use when we forecast total wage and salary income for Minnesota. And that's a very important variable. It's the largest source of income in our income tax. So this again is US. In this chart, the height of the bars shows annual growth in US total wage and salary incomes. So that's total income. So it's the sum of all the payrolls of all the employers in the United States. And the height of the bars shows the annual growth in that variable. So if you take a look back though at 2020, you can see that wage and salary income grew 1.3% last year. And that's even as unemployment peaked last spring for the United States at nearly 15%. So start of the pandemic, peak of unemployment at 15%, lots of job losses. And yet total wage and salary income grew last year. And for wage income to grow at the same time that so many people lost jobs illustrates the unevenness of last year's employment and job losses. I'm sorry, employment and income losses, when it was disproportionately low wage workers who lost their jobs rather than high wage workers. Regarding the US labor market, the last 2 years have seen a decline in US labor force participation as workers have opted out of employment for a variety of reasons, including difficulties finding affordable and accessible childcare, lingering COVID-related safety concerns, and early retirement. In October of this year, the US labor force participation rate was 61.6%, well below the 63.4% prior to the pandemic. IHS expects a tightening labor market in the US. So a tight labor market means high demand for workers and low unemployment. And they expect that to drive up wage and salary income. So this value, this variable that you're looking at in the chart, wage and salary income, can go up because more people are working, or it can go up because the people who are working are getting higher wages per worker, or because both of those things are happening. IHS now expects strong wage income of 8% this year, up from 6.7% in February, followed by a small deceleration to 7.9% next year. And then the forecast for wage and salary income was revised upward significantly for years 22 to 25. These values in their December outlook, their wage and salary income forecast is, again, higher in the near term than it was in the November outlook. So again, they've pushed some of that growth into the near term. And some of that is because the inflation forecast is higher in the near term. And this is nominal wage and salary income, so it is affected by inflation. The next chart shows levels of U.S. corporate profits, so dollar values of U.S. corporate profits, and that's the main factor determining Minnesota corporate tax revenues. The solid line shows IHS's November outlook, and the dashed line shows what they expected in February. Corporate profits were unexpectedly strong during the first half of 2021 this year, driving higher than expected corporate tax receipts at the federal level in many states, including Minnesota, and an increase in the corporate profits forecast. In the November outlook, corporate profits are expected to grow 19% in 2021. That's nearly four times the rate forecast in February. Move on to the labor market, Minnesota's labor market compared to the U.S. This chart shows the official unemployment rates for Minnesota and the United States. The dark line is Minnesota and the light line is the United States. And those vertical gray bars are, of course, the recessions. So you can see the very narrow bar in 2020 for the short but abrupt recession last year. And in coinciding with that, that narrow gray bar in 2020, you can see the sharp spikes in unemployment last year when Minnesota's unemployment rate reached 11.3%. As of October, the state's unemployment rate had fallen to 3.4%, 1.1 percentage points below the U.S. unemployment rate and the 14th lowest among states. Of course, the overall unemployment rate doesn't capture important differences between groups, and it also doesn't capture or doesn't reflect Minnesotans who have left the labor force, including for retirements or those who have stayed home to take care of children. Since the onset of the pandemic, Minnesota's labor force has fallen by 84,000. As of October, our labor force participation rate was 67.8%. That's 2.4 percentage points lower than in February of 2020, so at the onset of the pandemic. Nevertheless, even though our labor force participation rate has fallen during the pandemic, the relationship between Minnesota's labor force participation rate and the U.S. has remained. So the state's participation rate remains high relative to the U.S., 6.2 percentage points above the U.S. rate. And as of October, it was the fifth highest among U.S. states. And as with the U.S. forecast, we do expect a tightening labor market in Minnesota. So high demand for workers. We know we have very high job vacancies right now in Minnesota. High demand for workers, low unemployment. We expect those things together to push up wage and salary income in the state. The next chart gives a different view of the labor market. This shows total employment in Minnesota, so it's just levels of employment, which is numbers of workers in jobs. And we're just showing the view since the last recession. So from 2009 to 2020, you can see we had really quite steady additions of jobs or employment growth during those 10 years of economic expansion. But you can also see, if you look carefully at the line just before we get to the pandemic in February, the spring of 2020, you can see that the slope of the line is starting to level off. And that means that our employment growth rate was slowing. So prior to the pandemic, our employment growth rate was slowing, and that was largely due to the aging of the population. It was due to slower labor force growth because of the large number of workers who were aging out of the workforce. So amid that environment where we had a very tight labor market at that time, high demand for workers and low unemployment, and then the pandemic hit. And in March and April of last year, Minnesota lost 416,000 jobs. That was about 14% of February of 2020 employment. Since then, state employers have added jobs in most months, and through October, 296,000 of those jobs had been recovered. Minnesota employment is now 121,000, or 4% lower than it was in February of 2020. Now I'll turn to the revenue forecast. The first two columns of the table show actual receipts at the close of the prior biennium and the change from the prior estimate. So this is the closed biennium story that the commissioner talked about. And the next two columns show the current forecast and the forecast change for the current biennium, fiscal years 22 and 23. I mentioned that income, consumer spending, and corporate profits all grew more in calendar year 20 than had been expected. And this drove extraordinary revenue growth in fiscal year 21, which ended with revenues $2.775 billion ahead of our February 21 forecast. This is the bulk of that $3.1 billion carryover from the last biennium to the current biennium that Commissioner Showalter described. Moving to the second two columns, higher tax receipts to date in fiscal year 22. So we had higher tax receipts much higher than expected at the close of fiscal year 21. And we have had higher tax receipts so far in fiscal year 22, higher than we expected. So those higher tax receipts to date in fiscal year 22 and the improved outlook for income, consumer spending, and profits raised the revenue forecast for fiscal years 22 and 23. Total general fund revenues for the current biennium are now forecast to be $5.130 billion more than the February forecast. We've raised the forecast for all the major tax types. Individual income tax receipts are now forecast to be $2.7 billion more than the prior forecast. So that's due to a couple of things: a higher estimate for tax liability for 2020, for tax year 2020, which is the base year for our forecast, so the place where we start our income tax forecast. Now, we had that higher, those higher receipts than expected at the close of fiscal year 21. In the income tax, that was largely because of higher tax year 20 income tax liability. So we had to raise our forecast, our estimate of tax year 20 liability. And that raises the base of our forecast. And then we have higher growth in wage income, as I've mentioned. We also have higher forecast growth in non-wage income, especially business income and capital gains realizations. So that higher base plus higher growth rates going forward, those things raise the income tax forecast for the remainder of this fiscal year and for the next. Sales tax revenue is now forecast to be $821 million more than the prior forecast. That higher forecast is consistent with the increased growth in consumer spending I mentioned earlier, but it's also due to higher collections so far this fiscal year. The forecast is reduced by, so what you see, the forecast change that you see there, that's been reduced by $359 million for elimination of the June general sales tax acceleration that Commissioner Showalter mentioned. The corporate tax is projected to generate $1.249 billion more than the prior estimate, and that's based on a higher forecast for corporate profits, as I mentioned earlier, and higher collections so far this fiscal year. My last image tells you, lists some of the risks to this economic outlook. I've mentioned that the economic forecast depends on the path of the pandemic, including the impact of any new variants and any new treatments. So at the time that IHS released their November outlook, the Omicron variant had not been, that it had emerged, but we didn't know about it yet. So the Omicron variant was not part of the prior forecast. So, but any new variants of the virus and any other new treatments, any changes in the path of the pandemic, that creates risk to this forecast. The assumption embedded in this forecast that inflation settles back into the 2% range by at the end of next year and into the following year depends on the resolution of supply chain blockages and on a gradual increase in labor force participation. So higher or more persistent inflation can change the timing of expected actions by the Federal Reserve. And as I explained in their December outlook, IHS has raised their expectations for inflation and has accelerated the pace of actions by the Federal Reserve. They've also slowed their expectations for that labor force participation recovery. So all of those things, if they maintain that, those characteristics in their forecasts through January and February, then those will be incorporated into our February forecast. Those supply chain disruptions and the pandemic path both threaten growth in other countries. Slower than forecast economic growth in important U.S. trading partners can lower demand for U.S. goods and slow U.S. growth. And then finally, with 19 months remaining until the end of this biennium, even small changes in assumed rates of growth and important revenue sources can have big changes on the budget outlook for this biennium and the next. I'll now turn it over to Brian Dahl.
Mr. Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, my name is Brian Dahl, Financial Planning Director with the Budget Division at Minnesota Management and Budget. So this slide outlines changes in the general fund spending in the recently closed biennium, as well as projected changes in the current biennium. Changes in FY21 are meaningful because they are part of the balance that carried forward into fiscal year 22, contributing to the projected surplus. Overall, spending changes are relatively small, about 0.7% lower than the lower in both the previous biennium and the current. Let's start by discussing the changes in fiscal year 21. E12 spending, the largest portion of the general fund budget, was $84 million lower as a result of fewer than expected pupils. Health and Human Services spending was $102 million below previous estimates, largely the result of underspending in agency operating and grant appropriations. Spending for property tax aids and credits was $80 million lower than previous estimates. Much of this is the result of reallocating general fund spending on business relief grants to the federal coronavirus relief funds. All other areas of the state budget combined had $65 million lower spending compared to end of session estimates. Much of this underspending in areas of the budget that carried forward into fiscal year 22. In the current biennium, total spending is forecast to be $364 million, or about 0.7% lower than end of session estimates. The largest change is E-12 education, where we see a reduction of $326 million from previous estimates. The state education forecast has been updated to account for declining growth in our student population. New data and improved methods have resulted in refined estimates, which drive general fund savings. Health and Human Services spending is $94 million lower than end of session estimates. A large driver of this change is enrollment in the state's child care assistance program during the COVID-19 pandemic. State spending on property tax aids and credits is also lower in fiscal year 22-23 as a result of lower projected spending for the renter property tax refund program. Debt service payments are below previous projections due to lower bond rates in our September 2021 bond sale, which we had a 1.7% rate versus 2.4% projected in the forecast, and updated cash flow needs for existing bonding projects. All other areas of the budget are $136 million above previous estimates. This is primarily due to appropriations that were carried forward from fiscal year 21 and now projected to be spent in fiscal year 22. This spending increase also reflects a $30 million contingent appropriation to the disaster contingency account, which was triggered by the positive variance in the general fund close balance for fiscal year 21. Let's move on to discuss changes in the general fund budget reserve. This chart illustrates the growth in our general fund budget reserve in recent years, highlighting the changes in this forecast. With this forecast, our current budget reserve balance is $2.656 billion in fiscal year 2022. As a result of our improved general fund balance, this forecast allocates additional funds to the general fund budget reserve, reaching the statutory target established under Minnesota's nation-leading budget reserve policy. Since 2014, Minnesota has had a budget reserve target based on an annual analysis of revenue volatility. State law directs 33% of the November forecast balance to the reserve until the target is met. Our current target is 4.8% of the general fund revenues in the current biennium. As you can see on this chart, in the last forecast, we projected a decline in the general fund budget reserve from 2021 to 2022. Two provisions enacted by the 2019 legislature resulted in $591 million moving from the reserve to the general fund. However, the 2021 legislature directed the first dollar of any future forecast surplus to the budget reserve until it returned to $2.377 billion. Today's positive news, or this forecast positive news, fully restores the reserve to $2.377 billion with an addition of $591 million. It also results in the deposit of another $279 million, the amount necessary to meet the reserve target. In total, this forecast results in an $870 million increase in the general fund budget reserve in fiscal year 22. With these increases, we achieve the target set in law. I'll now turn it back to Commissioner Showalter.
Thanks, Brian. The last slide really gets us to the concluding picture of how does this budget forecast look, not just in the past biennium or the current biennium, but how does it look in the next one? And basically what you see, as I mentioned early on this in the presentation, is that we continue to see revenue growth exceeding spending growth through that period. Here you see the annualized growth estimates of a 3.7% for revenues, which exceed the projected spending growth of 2.2%. Obviously, this comparison doesn't add in into our spending projections the impact of inflation, which is more than about $1.16 billion by our estimates for the next biennium. What that means is that as goods and services become more expensive, that would be the estimated impact that would increase spending during that 24 and 25 biennium. And as everyone already knows, our budget is set by the legislature for the current biennium. So these figures also don't include any impact on current inflation in those purchasing power of those current appropriations. But that said, it is somewhat surprising and certainly good news that at this point, we're seeing that our revenue estimates continue to pace and outpace our spending obligations. Now, there's obviously a lot of thanks to go around for everyone in the state as we have been adjusting to the pandemic, adapting our economy and our lives. We mentioned that at the forecast release. I just want to, at this point, just also thank, Brian and Dr. Colin Bakitas and Anna and Amanda and all the EBOs and team leaders who put this together. It's been a huge piece of work to pull together just to appreciate all of the efforts that go into it. So with that, Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity to testify and really happy to take any questions that the committee might have.
I want to thank you all for your presentation today. We will use the balance of our time right now, folks, to ask questions from the committee. Let me see if I can open up to see if I see any hands up. Let's see. Are there any questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question is on the legacy funds. Usually it takes a few days after the announcement. Just could you maybe just give us an idea on clean water and outdoor heritage and parks and arts, just how much additional dollars came in?
Commissioner Walters.
Thank you. I'm going to ask Brian if he's got that information handy. I don't.
I am going to, Madam Chair, Representative, I will, we are going to publish the consolidated fund statement today with those numbers. I will try and pull up that information in a moment here, but what I will say is the positive sales tax forecast we're seeing in the general fund also impacts the legacy funds in a similar way. So we would expect a positive projection for the balances in those funds as well.
All right, thank you. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a question for Ms. Klombokidis, having to do with the one of the risks of the forecast you mentioned was labor force participation. And earlier you'd cited childcare as being a particular concern relating to that. And I wonder if you could just expand on that. I know that there's a federal effort to the Build Back Better bill to address that. If you just talk about kind of what the risks and concerns are there.
Dr. Klombokidis.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Pinto. So prior to the pandemic, affordable childcare was a challenge for a lot of working families. And then the pandemic, of course, made that worse. Because lots of childcare centers had to close, and because there are ongoing concerns about health and transmission of the virus. So there are a number of things that are keeping people out of seeking jobs right now. And one of them is affordable and accessible childcare. Another may be, you know, caring for elder family members. I think the bulk, the data come from the national level, not from Minnesota, but I think the bulk of the people who are identified as having left the labor market are people who are of retirement age or close. So a lot of them have been people who have left because they've decided to retire during the pandemic. So when I think about those risks and the risk to Minnesota's continued success through this challenge, I think about removing barriers to people returning to work. And one of those things that can potentially be done to remove barriers is to improve access and affordability of childcare. Another is lingering COVID-related health and safety concerns. And so that's another way that could potentially bring people back into the labor market. We do know that during the pandemic, both in Minnesota and at the US level, there has been a strong appetite for business formation. So some people have chosen, rather than be employed, they've chosen to start a business and work for themselves. So that's another aspect of this.
Representative Pinto, is there a follow-up?
No, Madam Chair. Thank you, Dr. Kornbukidis.
Thank you. All right. Do we have any other questions?
Madam Chair, I think Representative Hertas was seeking to be recognized.
Okay. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Dr. Kornbukidis, I'd like to have you comment a little bit in a flashback way, if you will. A little more than a year ago, you had predicted, in presenting to this committee, a very V-shaped recovery. And you had made that prediction based on some factors, which I don't recall exactly what those were, a little more than a year ago. And I guess I'd like you to maybe bring us up to date if, in fact, those assumptions and factors for a V-shaped recovery have proven to be the reasons or factors for why we're at. We're clearly now showing a different path of recovery in terms of excess revenues than what was predicted. So is this kind of an amplification of those factors, or are there other things, as you've kind of touched on today, that have exacerbated the stealth of the recovery?
Dr. Kornbukidis.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Hertas. So recalling the first slide that I showed of U.S. real GDP, there were these two quarters of contraction in 2020, very sharp in the second quarter. And then there was a V, that bounced back in the second half of 2020. I believe you're trying to remember what the pictures looked like in the past. I believe that recovery was more expected to be more aggressive than what it turned out to be, that it's that the growth slowed relative to what had been forecast. And part of that was in this year, having the Delta variant show up in the second half of the year slowed growth in 2021 relative to what may have been forecast a year ago. So that it still was an abrupt change, and we still recovered to the level of GDP that we were prior to the pandemic, and the U.S. is getting very close to the path of GDP growth that we had been on prior to the pandemic, but it's taking a longer now to get to that pre-pandemic path than had been expected before. And again, that's largely due to changes in things having to do with the pandemic and slower labor force participation than expected. And now these supply chain disruptions and higher inflation. So all of those things have changed the picture. In terms of the revenue picture, the the reason for the unexpected growth in tax receipts is higher than expected growth, that for tax fiscal year 21 was higher than expected growth in 20, in calendar year 20 and the first half of 21. And then that continued into the second half of 21. So their fiscal year 22 receipts have been higher than expected. And you know, the variables that have grown faster this year than expected are the ones that I illustrated. So income, corporate profits, consumer spending.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. And so, I mean, we were had an unprecedented May updated forecast, which was predicting, going back to the start of the pandemic, was predicting a $5.8 billion deficit. Here we are at $7.7 billion surplus. So we've had a pretty structural change or shift in revenue as predicted or forecast of nearly $13 billion from a low to where we are at high. And I'm a little perplexed by the increase in individual income tax revenues when so much of what was received in federal assistance in terms of the monthly or weekly $600 stipend onto the state unemployment, and we subsequently passed laws that made that non-taxable. So a lot of that income, people that were unemployed, was not taxable. So you've explained that the individual income tax receipts are up, and I trust that is the case. And I just think it's remarkable that given the high rate of unemployment and the consumer spending I get because people had money and cash in their hands from the CARES Act and ARPA and other things like that. So they were spending it on durables, which, you know, certainly helped revenues. But this is an extraordinary situation. Thank you.
Thank you. I think I have a question, and maybe it's a question for Commissioner Showalters, or just let me know which one of your team members can respond to it. But my question is that we know that Minnesota got in excess of $4 billion from the American Rescue Plan, and now we see Minnesota has a surplus in excess of $4 billion. Are those two things related in any way?
I'll take, Madam Chair, members, a great question. And I think we've all tried to kind of wrestle with the impact of federal stimulus, federal help, and how that's really shows through to the forecast. I'll take a shot at it. And if Dr. Kay would want to add to it, that's great. Yeah, from my perspective, you know, the economy is huge. And so the $4 billion coming to Minnesota, while important, doesn't translate to that kind of revenues and certainly doesn't, in a cash basis, flow through to the projections that you're seeing here. What it did do was create a lot of optimism. It kept things going and prevented people from losing confidence that they could figure it out. And so our businesses kept on working, that our employees and our employment base kept on going, that, you know, the state didn't pull back, but in fact kept going and continued to support people in need. And so as a result, our revenue picture looks a lot more like it did 2 years ago than the depths of despair that we were feeling a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And so to me, that's kind of the federal stimulus had kind of the impact that you would hope it would have, which was to help us through what was clearly a difficult patch. But at the same time, I don't think that the dollars per se sort of transfer in as neatly to the forecast that as numbers would suggest that it would. Dr. Kalambakidis, you have a finer view of this. How would you describe it?
Dr. Kalambakidis.
Madam Chair, so the commissioner's right. When we're talking about spending from the federal government directly to Minnesota households and Minnesota businesses, so not money that came from the federal government to the state of Minnesota, to the government, but to Minnesota households and businesses, yes, of course, it did support consumer spending. It did support businesses to be able to keep people on the payroll. And, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, we didn't know that the federal government was going to put that much money into fiscal stimulus. And it did allow the businesses and households in the state to, to continue to operate, and the households continue to spend. A couple of factors. One is that it is an illustration, again, and this is partly in response to Representative Hurtas's comments, that the fact that the economy continued to grow and consumer spending continued and employment continued is an illustration of the disproportionate impact of the pandemic and the recession on low-income households. So most high-income households retained their jobs and their wages, and so they were able to continue to pay income taxes. And the job losses were concentrated in lower-wage households, and so that's something that helps answer some of what's perplexing about this revenue situation. And another thing that happened with the federal payments going to households is that households saved some of it. And so the commissioner is right that there's not a dollar-to-dollar match between the money going to the households and the money coming to the state in tax revenues. Some of that is because it's saved and it's continuing to support spending going forward.
Thank you. That brings for me some a little bit more clarity about where we are. Okay. Do we see Representative Pinto?
Madam Chair, apologies for asking another question. I just thought of this in response to some of those exchanges. Thanks. So again, to Dr. Kolombakidis, just putting some of the different items that you mentioned together, I guess I'm wondering if you could comment on what this forecast shows about the impact of the pandemic on different groups of Minnesotans. I guess the pieces that jumped out to me are our corporate profits are a lot higher and projected to be a lot higher than we might have thought earlier. We know you talked about the job loss really being concentrated among low-income Minnesotans. I noted the CCAP expenditures are lower because it seems like because there were low-income Minnesotans who weren't able to work because, again, they lost their jobs. So can you just talk about kind of what this can tell us about the impact of the pandemic and kind of what the forecast is saying for recovery in terms of Minnesotans of higher incomes and corporations versus those who maybe are low-wage workers and kind of living paycheck to paycheck?
Dr. Kolombakidis.
Madam Chair, Representative, this has been such an extraordinary period and so many unexpected things have happened. And one of the extraordinary things that you're touching on here is the disproportionate impact of the recession of 2020 on low-income people. The largest numbers of the jobs lost, largest shares of jobs lost were in those face-to-face service industries. So hotels and bars and restaurants, and those are jobs that we have not yet recovered. So that we have not gotten back to employment in those areas. And they were lower wage jobs to begin with. And we talked about that in the middle of 2020, that we were tracking the occupations of the people who were filing for unemployment insurance claims. And it was disproportionately lower wage workers that were claiming unemployment benefits. Many of us, Minnesota has a large share of our employment in professional and business services. That's great for the economy. Those are high wage jobs. And it was good for the economy because those workers were able to telework and didn't lose their jobs even during the pandemic. So it was just the extraordinary nature. This was such a different recession from anything we've ever seen before. Recessions often have a broader impact across the economy. A wider range of people lose their jobs. Homes lose value potentially. The stock market loses value potentially. And those things were all different this time. So as I said in the beginning of my comments, financial asset prices, home prices, corporate profits, those things have all remained high through this year. And so there are, I can't identify specific categories of people who, you know, and where they land sort of in our forecast, but I can say that people who hold stock, people who own their homes, people who work in jobs that were able to telework, while the pandemic has disrupted everyone's life, and even businesses that are doing well through the pandemic, their business plans were completely disrupted. Everyone has had to deal with this. Many of those people, however, have been able to retain their incomes, and lower wage workers, many of them have not, and then have on top of that been faced with issues related to affordable childcare, affordable housing, affordable transportation.
Do you have a follow-up?
No, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Dr. Cohen-Bakitis, and Madam Chair, that'll be helpful information for us to keep in mind as we're shaping policies the coming session. Thank you.
Representative Hertas, I saw something go up and then down. Do you have a question?
I do, but why don't I let Representative Eklund go first and then come back to me?
Just for informational purposes, Representative Hertoff, I believe you're using the clap hand instead of the raise hands, which is why it disappears.
Ah, thank you.
Yeah, okay. Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this will be real quick. Commissioner Showalter, I'm just curious, you mentioned the 21st Century Mineral Fund. Has that been restored? That fund balance been restored to the pre-pandemic level that it was at?
Commissioner Showalter.
Madam Chair, Representative, great question. I'm not sure about the actual balance of it, but in law, there was a trigger saying that we would put the $4 million back in the event of a surplus. And so that's exactly what's included in this. I'm assuming in the consolidated forecast statement, we'll include a detailed balance of that fund along with all the other ones.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you, Representative Eklund. Okay, Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And when Mr. Showalter was giving his explanation, it caused me to think of one other question. And Dr. Kalamoukidis, in past meetings, I have asked a question about the velocity of money. The term is oftentimes used as to the frequency or number of times dollars turned hands in a given business cycle or year. And it would seem that income tax receipts and sales tax receipts could be the result of this factor, the velocity of money. Each time somebody has a dollar and spends it, it collects sales tax revenue, not in every circumstance, but often. And if a dollar is changing hands, it results as income to somebody else and raises income tax receipts or revenues. So could you comment, please, on whether or not this injection of cash, both by sustaining people's levels of income during the pandemic with the federal monies that were coming and the state money, certainly people being unemployed but continuing to have a revenue stream, they had more time to shop, I guess, maybe more time to buy those durables. But is this kind of a testimonial of people having money in their hand raises state revenues?
Dr. Kalamoukidis.
Madam Chair, Representative, fascinating question. I'm trying to remember if I asked a question about velocity of money on the final exam for my intermediate macro class that just wrapped up this semester.
Nobody's been able to answer the question for me as to how many times is the average turns or what is the velocity of money in an annualized basis. But
all right, well, I'll try to figure that out for you. In the meantime, okay, so the question is, people having money in their hands, does that what's the relationship between that and increased tax revenues in particular? Well, so you said, I'm just reiterating the question so that I've got it straight in my mind. So if people who have money, they have a propensity to spend it, So they either spend or they save, or they spend some of it or they save some of it. So some of it, in, we know that the stimulus checks and the pandemic unemployment relief benefits people got, they saved some and spent some. So that spending did increase consumer spending beyond what we had expected it to, and that increased tax revenues, sales tax revenues. And then that, you mentioned, it's income to somebody on the other side of that transaction. So the businesses that received that, those sales were able to survive longer and be more profitable than had been expected. So those benefits did occur. Now, one of the reasons that can be just a benefit, a straight up benefit to Minnesota, is that that money came from the federal government and those that spending was deficit financed. So that meant that it was just money coming in without increased, without having to cut spending somewhere else. The challenge for the state, and I don't know if this is where you're getting at, but it's where my thoughts go, is that because the state has to balance its budget, it doesn't have as much of an opportunity to do that sort of stimulative spending because we can't borrow to get money into people's hands. So from a fiscal federalism standpoint, meaning the fiscal relationship between this federal government and the subfederal units, in a dire recession, it can be that deficit spending on the part of the federal government can be the right thing to do because it gets money into the hands of people at, in the subfederal units in states and localities, and they're able to support tax revenues in those states and localities so that the states and localities don't have to lay off workers or reduce services. Is that close to what you were thinking about?
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I think it probably comes back to maybe philosophical differences from a macroeconomic point of view as to whether or not the private sector, oftentimes in times of recession, there's a tendency of government to want to raise taxes to balance state coffers budgets. But on the other hand, there's also the philosophical debate of whether or not that's an appropriate time to cut taxes and to inject what normally would be coming into the state and into the private sector, and whether or not the velocity of money, number of turns in the exchange of dollars between individuals deciding what is the most urgent needs in an economy, that actually generates revenue that really raises tax revenues. So it's often been debated whether or not tax cuts raise revenues or tax increases hurt the economy. But I guess there's that balancing act. And this just seems to be an example of where the velocity of money and people having discretionary dollars to spend seems to have raised revenues.
Okay. I am not seeing any other questions. Do we have any? Okay. Well, members, being no other questions, that will conclude our agenda for today. I do want to thank the commissioner and his team once again for their hard work in preparing this forecast. I also want to thank them for all the hard work they have done behind the scenes throughout the last year to manage our state's financial resources and to ensure that they are deploying in a timely manner. It wasn't deployed in a timely manner as we continue to battle the economic and the public health risks of the COVID-19 pandemic. It is not an easy task. We will likely hold at least one more interim hearing in January to help us prepare for what will be a busier short session than usual for our committee. So please keep an eye out for additional information from staff. And I hope you all have an opportunity to enjoy a little more time off this holiday season before we dive into another busy season session during the People's Work. So please enjoy the holiday. It is a season that we get to reflect, and you know, for some of us, count our blessings. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you so much, everyone. Take care.